story is based on three different Gemaras. Gemara in Ksuvos, Gemara in Shabbos, Gemara in Darim, a little bit Gittin, the Avestor of Nasin. And it begins shortly before the time of Churim Bayis Sheni. There lived an incredibly wealthy person in Yerushalayim, one of the Chashuvei Yerushalayim. His name was Kalba Savua. It wasn't actually his name, but it's what he was known as, what they called him. And he was called Kalba Savua because whoever came to him, you could come kick Kalba as hungry as a starving dog, and you would leave Sovea Savua, you would leave satiated, you leave full. He was a tremendous Baltstaka. Not only was he a tremendous Baltstaka, but he understood the chashivas, the importance of Torah. The Gemara tells us his home was a Beis Vad L'Chachamim. It was a meeting place, a gathering place for all of the Chachamim. The Gemara tells us that his wealth alone could have sustained Yerushalayim for 21 years. You could imagine to be connected to such a family. Kalba Savua, the Gemara tells us, had one daughter. And that daughter's name was Rachel. And she was the it girl. She was beautiful. She was bright. And you could imagine his house being a Beis Vad for Chachamim. Imagine the top name on all the Sharchanim's list. Imagine the Sharchanim's from Kalba Savua. She could have her pick of the brightest, the future stars of the Jewish people. Anyone who needed a job would come to Kalba Savua, and if he didn't introduce them to someone who could give them, he himself would give them a job. And there's one such person, very, very simple person, was actually the son of a ger, of a convert. He was very ignorant. I wish I could say he was just ignorant, but that would be false. The Gemara tells us he also happened to have a hatred toward the Rabbanim, toward the Chachamim, toward the Talmidei Chachamim. He clearly had no appreciation for Torah. And the Gemara tells us, Anchishenu kichamor. If I saw Talmud Chacham, I would bite him like a donkey. And Chazal tell us, we bite him like a donkey. Unlike a dog, it bites you and then it lets go. A donkey goes ahead, it bites, and it does it. It keeps dragging you. So here's this person, no love, great love for the Chachamim, for the Rabbanon. Completely ignorant, no yichus at all. And he comes to Kalba Savua for a job. Kalba Savua gives him a job as a shepherd. And the Gemara doesn't tell us when it happened. But at some point, this Rachel, this girl, who all the young rabbis, all those eligible rabbinical students have their eyes on, she notices about this Akiva. The Tosfos tells us he was mali utsnua. He had a real sense of humbleness and a sense of sincerity, a real natural religiosity. It wasn't forced, it wasn't a facade. And they begin to speak, they begin to talk, and they fall in love. Now you have to understand, Rachel realizes and recognizes that there's no way in the world her father will let her marry this Akiva. And not because he had no yichus. Not because he didn't come from great standing, didn't have any money. He didn't care about any of this. Kalbasavua was a very special person. Kalbasavua, he only cared about one thing: my daughter should marry a Talmid Chacham, somebody who knows how to learn, appreciates Torah. And she goes ahead and she gets married to Sesar in secret. But before she marries this Akiva, she says, I'm going to marry you on one condition. You give me your word. At some point, you're going to give learning, you're going to give Torah a real shot, a real chance. And this Akiva agrees. And they go ahead, they get married in secret. And we can only imagine the conversation when Kalbasavua wants to set his daughter up with like the next Gadol Hadar. And she says, I can't. What do you mean you can't? I'm married. You're what? What? To who? And he finds out it's to this Akiva, this ignorant man, and he goes crazy. How could you? How could you do this? You have all of them lining up for you. A total ignoramus. He knows nothing. And in his anger, he's Mudar Hanok. He takes a vow that she is no longer allowed to get any pleasure from any of my nechassim, of anything that I own. She's out. She's done. She's cut off. Disgraced. And as you could imagine, she's forced to leave. And someone like Kalbasavua is so influential. Once this happens, Akiva obviously loses his job with him, but nobody will touch him. Nobody will employ him. How could he do this? And the Gemara tells us that they're living in abject poverty, and the years roll on. And that dream of going off to a yeshiva to learn becomes just that, a dream, not reality. The Gemara tells us in order for him to survive, for him to feed his wife and family, he has to go ahead and he goes and collects kindling, little scrap, little wood, little pieces of wood to sell. And things go from bad to worse. They're living in a dilapidated barn. And all they have is just straw, that there's some straw they can lie on. And one day there's a knock on the barn door. And the Gemara tells us that it's really Elio Anavi. And there's a man who's standing at the door holding a baby. And he's holding the baby and says, please, can you help me? Can you help me? And Akiva looks at him and says, help you? We have nothing. And so maybe you have a little bit of straw. Maybe there's a little bit of straw you could go ahead and you could give me. I could go ahead and I could have something soft to put our baby on. Akiva looks back. He says, straw's about the only thing we do have. And he goes ahead. Rachel gives him some straw. He brings the man. Says, thank you so much. Thank you. I can't tell you how this means to us. And he goes walking away holding this baby on a bed of straw. And at that point, Rachel looks at her husband Akiva, the ignoramus, and says, look, Akiva, I don't know if things are ever going to get better. Remember that promise you made to me so many years ago? Remember the promise you made about going and giving learning a chance and going to yeshiva? And Akiva says, how can I do this? How are we going to survive? She says, don't worry. I'll survive. Look, there's someone who has even less than we have. He didn't even have straw. At least we have straw. I'll make it through. I'll get by. You go ahead. You go off to yeshiva. And Akiva goes off fulfilling that promise he made to the yeshiva. And we could imagine at that point, he went to the great academy, the great yeshiva of Rabbi Yehoshua and Rabbi Elazar. And he comes in with great enthusiasm. And he was no dummy. And he comes in and he sits in that base medrash and thousands of guys, thousands upon thousands. And he's standing there, he's sitting there.
days turn into weeks, and he doesn't understand a thing. It's absolutely nothing. Knows nothing. You know what it's like to be in a place where, you know, sheer, you just have no idea. And everyone else is like, oh, listening and getting it, and you're just like, and he's such a truthful, honest, sincere person. Yeah, it's just crazy. I can't do this. Clearly, it's not for me. And he picks himself up, and he goes, and he's on his way back to that dilapidated barn. An absolute failure. A total failure. Total failure. Now, we all know what happens on that way back. He stops at a certain place, and there he goes ahead and he sees something that would change all of Jewish history. That we wouldn't be in this room today if this didn't happen. He sits to rest, and he sees there's a stream with a waterfall. And he sees the water flowing onto a rock, and it looks a little closer, and he sees that where the water is hitting the rock, there's an indentation. The rock is hollow in the middle. And he looks at this, and all of a sudden he realizes. He once heard that Torah is compared to steel, to barzel. And he says he's nidrash kal v'chomer. He makes a kal v'chomer by himself. He says if wood, which is the most viscous of elements, if that has an ability to make an impression, to make a hole on a rock which is so hard, then alakas kama v'kama Torah, which is nidrash kal v'chomer, Torah which is compared to steel, how much more so can it make impression on me? And he realizes, no, I can't throw in the towel yet. I can't give up yet. And he turns around, but this time he does it differently. And Chazal tell us, instead of going back to the main yeshiva, Yeshiva Gedola, he swallows his pride, and he goes to Cheder with the little kids. And people are walking by, parents, fathers are holding their sons on their shoulders to go learn like the Aleph-Bays. And there they have that guy, can you imagine? There's an adult sitting on the floor. They're laughing. Who's this guy? Aleph, Beis, Gimel, Dalet. And he wants it. And he learns the Aleph Beis. And he moves from the Aleph Beis. And then he goes ahead. And he starts learning. He learns to read. Then he starts learning Chumash. And slowly, but surely, he begins to climb. Until finally he claws his way. With an unbelievable amelus, the Gemara tells us. And he goes ahead and finally he works his way back in to Smadrish of Rabbi Yoshua and Rabbi Lazar. And at that point there wasn't Gemara yet. These are the Tanaim. They learned Svara. And he's there. And now he's back and he understands it. And the Gemara tells us about those years. There was nobody who got to the Beis Medrash earlier or who left later than this Akiva. Nobody wanted it more. And years are rolling by. And then he goes ahead and one day he becomes the person who's asking questions to the guy who people start, you know that guy who everyone starts going to because he has it, he knows it. And then one day, the fateful day comes where Rabbi Yoshua is there and he's darshaning and the translator is standing up and darshaning and all of a sudden from the back of this massive Beis Medrash, Akiva stands up and he yells a question. And Rabbi Yoshua yells, stop! You, that question, it was so insightful, so incisive, it cut to the very heart of the sugya. I have nothing to teach you anymore. You have to go now. You have to begin to teach your own talmid. And he begins. And after 12 years, he has 12,000 talmid. 12,000 Talmidim and he is now Rebbe Akiva. And he goes and he says to his Talmidim, guys, the time has come. I gotta go home. His Talmidim said, Rebbe, no! Whoever separates from you, it's like separating from life itself. You're our Rebbe, you're our lifeline to Torah. Please, we'll come with you. And the Gemara says the 12th asked him, come in, and get up, and they start coming with him. And he's making his way back to the dilapidated barn. And the Gemara tells us in the Darim, there was a Marvin Bish, there was an evil neighbor. You know, someone from her old life. You know, maybe an old friend from the elite, you know, the high society, who would come to gloat over her and to put her down. And she happens to be in the barn at the time. And the friend, this evil friend, you can't call it a friend, this evil neighbor says, look at you wearing rags. Look at you, this is what you get when you marry a guy out of your social class. Look, he left you an almana chai, a living widow. And Rachel says, no. If it was up to me, he'd go back for another 12 years. And Rabbi Yankee inside, he hears this. He doesn't even walk in. The famous Bart Y of Chaim Shmulevitz, he turns around and goes back. And now 12 years later, he says, Avra, my 12 more years are up. It's time for me to go home. And the Talmidim say again, Rabbi, call Kiparish Min HaChayim. Anyone who separates from you, you're our lifeline. It's Chayim He. You are our life. And if you can imagine the scene, Rabbi Akiva gets up with 24,000 Talmidim now following him. And word spreads, the Gadol Hadar, undisputed Gadol Hadar, is coming. And immediately here, and he's coming towards Yerushalayim. And they go ahead and they set up a huge stage in the middle of Yerushalayim. All the Chashiv Yerushalayim are coming out there to greet him. And now this great man, the Gadol Hadar, comes. And you can imagine the scene. He gets to the dais, and everybody is there to greet him. And Rachel hears he's returned. She begins, takes out her nicest dress, gets the brush off. And again, Gemara tells us that evil neighbor is there again. What are you going to say now? Came great. He's the Gadol Hadar. There's always a way to be cynical. She says, what are you doing? She says, I'm getting ready. I'm going to see my husband. He's coming back. She says, do you think that great man remembers you? He's famous now. He's got the whole world at his fingertips. You're nothing to him. And Rachel says, no. He knows how much I've suffered. He knows how much I've sacrificed for him. And she begins to make her way. And there, she's pushing through the throng of people who've come out, all of Yerushalayim, and the 24,000 Talmidim. And she's pushing her way up to the front. And as she's pushing her way to the front, one of the Shamashim says, what are you doing? Get back! Move back! Go to the ladies' section! Rabbi Akiva sees Rachel. He sees his wife. And Rabbi Akiva says, no! Stop! Sheli shelochem shelochu. My Torah and your Torah. It's all hers. Shelochu, it's all hers. It's because of her sacrifice. And she comes up on that dais, that stage, and sits next to Rabbi Akiva. A short time later, the Gemara tells us, Kalba Sevua, he was feeling very bad about what had happened with his only daughter, how difficult it must be for her. And he had no idea that Akiva is now the Gadol Hadar. It's beyond imagination. He was a 40-year-old ignoramus. He knew nothing. Can't be, it's not the same person. And he comes, and he actually doesn't recognize him, and he comes and he says, you're the Gadol Hadar, I've been waiting to ask a question of you. Many, many years ago, I had a daughter. And she did something, she went against my wishes. And I was mutter hana, I swore she'd get no hana from anything. And I can only imagine how difficult things are.
I want, is there a way I can annul that vow?
And Rabbi Akiva is looking at his father-in-law, and he's clueless. Kalba Savua is clueless. And Rabbi Akiva says, tell me something. If you knew that that person that she married would have become an Talmid Chacham, would have you gone ahead and made the net? Kalba Savua says, Talmid Chacham? Forget Talmid Chacham.
If he would have known one pasuk, I wouldn't have made the net there. One pasuk. You don't understand. The man knew nothing. Knows nothing.
And Rabbi Akiva says, well, he does now. Aniyu. I'm him.
What?
The Gemara tells us Kalba Savua falls on his face, kisses the feet of Rabbi Akiva, and on the spot gives him half of all of his nechasim. And Rabbi Akiva, who so many years ago was a pauper in that dilapidated barn with the rain coming through the roof, picking straw out of Rachel's hair, so many years ago, he said, one day, I'm going to make you a tiara, a golden crown of the skyline of Yerushalayim. And she said, yes. And now he's able to make her that tiara. An amazing story. But I want to focus on one aspect of the story that frightens me beyond belief. You know, the Gemara tells us that anybody whose name is mentioned in the Gemara, that means they had the ability to do Tchiyas HaMeisim. The ability to do Tchiyas HaMeisim. Rabbi Akiva's name is mentioned in the Gemara. Someone want to take a stab at it? Over 1,000 times. Halacha to Rabbi Akiva al Chaverav. Not only that, but he was probably the greatest Tana. The halacha is right, Rabbi Akiva mechaverav over his friends. All of the Torah we have today, the Torah Shema Peh. It's because of Rabbi Akiva! Rabbi Akiva, the one who, when the Romans went ahead and they ripped his skin with Masrekes Shel Barzel, and his neshama went ahead and went out with Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad, and the Bas Kol came out and said, Ashrech Akiva, praise with you Akiva, who's mitar with all of the, he was leaving a body who's absolutely pure! The same Rabbi Akiva, Moshe Rabbeinu, when he gave the Torah. Hashem took him on like a magical mystery tour. And he brought him to Rabbi Akiva's shir. And it says he came into Rabbi Akiva's shir, and Rabbi Akiva was darshing out the tugin, the crowns of the letters. And Moshe Rabbeinu says, I don't understand the shir. Why didn't you give the Torah through me? Give it through him. Could you imagine such a person? Could you imagine if he had never seen the water flowing on the rock? Could you imagine if he didn't have an Eishes Chayil, a wife, who pushed him, who saw the potential in him that he didn't see in himself? I read this story, and this story is the most frightening story. Because what is the message to us? Can you imagine if Rabbi Akiva would have never seen the water hitting the rock and he would have went home and he would have lived the rest of his life in that dilapidated barn? Right now, the storm in front of us are disappearing. 1,000 times his name is disappearing from the Gemara. And perhaps we would disappear. How much potential do we have inside of us that we don't recognize? That we don't realize. Rav Yerucham Levavitz, the great Mashkiach of the Mir Yeshiva in Europe, he has an unbelievable shmooze. And he says that there are two parts to every sin. There's what he calls bikoach and bipoel. Bikoach is a person's potential. Bikoach
is the actualization of that potential. It's the ability to take the Mikoach, to take that potential, and to concretize it, to bring it into the world in concrete form, so it becomes part of us, so we can see it, so it becomes real. Rav Yerucham says, we make a terrible mistake. He says, we believe the world of Mikoach, the world of potential, Mikoach and the world of actual, are the same. He says it's such a terrible mistake, because the truth is, the world of Mikoach of potential is so much more vast. It's awesomely larger. And he gives a great example. Very in the Anadioma. He says, look at a match. What's a match? A match is a little wood stick with some sulfur on top. You take the match, you scrape it against, you know, something with friction, and there you got a fire. A little fire. Now let's see, what is in the potential of that little match? You can go ahead with that match and you can start. You can go ahead and you can put a piece of wood on fire. Light up a piece of wood. That match has the potential to burn down a house. It has the potential to burn down a forest and cause all of us in the middle of the night to go running. It has the potential to burn an entire country and possibly an entire world in the head of a little match. How about an apple tree? Look at this. Listen to this. This is crazy. The apple seed is small, but a bit of math shows that a single seed bursts with imagination staggering potential. From just one seed springs a tree that will yield a harvest of 100 apples a year. Each of those 100 apples bears 5 seeds, each of which in turn can produce a tree that itself will bear 100 apples a year. Each with 5 seeds, each producing a tree that will bear 100 apples a year, and so on and so forth. In one season, a lone seed becomes 500. In the second season, 500 multiplies to 2,500, which in turn becomes 12,500 seeds in the third season. In the fourth season and fifth, and a single seed has multiplied to more than 3.1 trillion seeds. And each tree produced in each previous generation also continued to yield the 100 apples a year. That's from one apple tree, from one seed. Biologically, how about us? We talk about intermarriage. Listen to this statistic. It's mind-boggling. What the potential of a person is just biologically. If a Jewish man marries a non-Jewish woman and has 2.2 children, the national average, I don't know what 0.2 looks like, you know, but okay. At the end of 20 generations, over 7 million children will have been born from this marriage that should have been Jews, and vice versa. You know, Rav Nachman would always say, says, you know, if one person, one man, has the ability, the potential to kill 6 million, and we all know that's true, all too true, then it has to be that one person has the ability to give life, to bring life to 6 million people. And I remember hearing that from them, being like blown away by it, like, wow, it has to be true. But I just wondered, who was that guy? Until I found him. Believe it or not, I found that guy. You think, who the heck is that guy, right? I went ahead. A headline caught my eye. It says, Robert Edwards wins Nobel Prize for fathering 4 million. You know, I didn't know they give me Nobel Prizes for that. But okay, I read the article. What did Robert Edwards discover? In vitro fertilization, which enabled 4 million children to be born that were never born. The potential that each and every one of us has is so awesome. It's so awesome. Let me tell you something. I heard an amazing mashal from Rav Ephraim Wax. He said something that mash, it shook me. Rav Ephraim Waxman said, imagine somebody goes ahead, I go to Shmar Yahu. I said, look, Shmar Yahu, I'm going to give you $1 billion. Whatever you don't use, you give me back the change. Now, what am I going to do? I don't know if it's me. I'd go ahead, I'd buy maybe a sports team. Well, there goes the $1 billion these days, you know, after the Clippers. But, okay, you know, I'd buy a few, you know, you buy a few skyscrapers, maybe a few planes, maybe a few this, that, mansions all over the world. I mean, you go ahead, and then what would I do? You go ahead, you'd have like, I don't know, like $1.50 left of the billion. You know, here's the change. He said, I could use it, whatever you do the change. Just imagine, I give Shmayo $1 billion. Shmayo goes to Yummies, buys his Gatorade bottle. Ben Shep comes back to hero of Donnie. Here's the other like $9 billion. Right? Crazy. Isn't that crazy? But so Sandra Fry Maxman says, that's how many, many people live their lives. Hashem gives us so much potential. He gives us billions! We have one of the billions he gives us! And you know what we do? God, it's okay, I don't need all this. I'm good, I'll watch my shows, I'll chill. All that potential, all that energy, all these incredible things I can go ahead and I can bring into the world. God, no, it's okay. Give it to someone else. Here's the change. Take the money back. Crazy. I mean, do we realize how special we are? How unique we are? It's not by chance. You know, there's a friend of mine, his name is John. He's an unbelievably special person. Actually, someone from the OU was trying to bring him this summer. He lives in my brother's community in Springfield, New Jersey. He's a gayer. He's African-American, and he's a DJ, like, just a very special guy. So sincere, so real. You know him?
No.
He's the best. So whenever I come into America, we work out together, and I love being around him, because he's such a sincere and firm person. He's a nurse, he's trained, he's, you know, like a surgical nurse. He's just really one of those people you're just in awe of. Like, loves Torah, loves Judaism. And he had a 40th birthday party this year. So I was in for it. And I made sure I was there Friday night. We did his house. And it comes time, you know, he's going to go ahead. He wants it. Everybody's there, all different ages. Everyone loves him. You can have guys, young guys hang out with him and older. Everyone loves this guy. They're one of those people. So we go ahead with there. And he says the following. He said something that literally, it rocked me. He said, you know, I just want you to know something. A few jokes, then he gets very serious. And he says, you guys are always telling me how special I am. But don't you guys realize? God chose you. God chose you. I just chose to be part of you. But you're the ones that God chose. And he chose you for a reason. Because you're the most incredible people in the world. I'm not the special one. God didn't choose me. God chose you. Do you realize what that means? Do you realize that in all of the people, how many people, 5-6 billion people? There's no person that looks or sounds exactly like you alive. And do you know that in all of history, there's no person that ever looked and sounded exactly like you? It's mind-boggling. Every single person is unique. Every single person has a specific job and a specific mission. A topless in this world has a specific potential in this world. And that's what we're put here to do. We're here to take out that potential, to draw it out. To take it, to go ahead and to end it. That's why. Bekoach, the potential. It looks, goes ahead, it looks very small. The Bekoach looks very small. The match looks tiny. But we see that its potential, the Bekoach, is humongous. We may look very small, we may feel very small, but we're not. You know, it says HaKadosh Baruch Hu takes Avraham Avinu, and he takes him HaChutza, and he shows him the stars, all the Kohanim, and he says, Ko Yezaracha, so be your descendants. We're compared, Nimshal Ki Kohanim, we're compared to the stars. Why the stars? The Baal Shem Tov says something awesome. The Baal Shem Tov says, you look from down here at the stars. They look so small. They're tiny. But we know, you go up there, one star is bigger than our whole world! He says that's exactly the same with every single Jew.
We go ahead and we see ourselves in the world of the Po'al, here, the actual. But you know, Hashem is up there. Hashem sees us because He sees what our potential is, what we can accomplish. I'll prove it to you in a halachic way. You all know that there's a halacha. If your life's in danger, what do? It doesn't matter what, any mitzvah, any avera, if it's not, you need medicine, it's not kosher, what do? You take the medicine. If it's Shabbos and you have to get to the hospital, what do? You drive to the hospital. You don't wait, you drive to the hospital. There's only three exceptions. What are those three exceptions? Good. Gil Yarai, Shrichas Damim, and Avodah Zarah. Now, to go ahead and to make an exception to that rule, that you have to give up your life, or it's a pretty heavy thing. So for two of them, we have a pasuk. Right? Avodah Zarah, Gil Yarai, there's a pasuk. How do we know Shrichas Damim? How do we know if someone comes to you and says, you go ahead and you do... you kill this guy or I'm going to kill you, that you have to give up your life? How do you know it? You know what the Gemara? We don't have a pasuk. How does the Gemara know it? Objectively, who should die? The person who is worth less. Who should live? The person who's worth more to God, right? That's what I think. The Gemara in Yuma says, we don't have a pasuk. And how do you know? Who has more potential? How do you know? Whose blood is redder? Who's more important in God's eyes? Now let's play it out. Let's play this out! The Chafetz Chaim is told, if you kill Heidemann, Chas v'Shalom, or I'm going to kill you. Now, again, here's the Chafetz Chaim. He has no pasuk, he has no nevuah, he has no Dvar Hashem. All he has is cold, hard logic. And the Gemara tells us what that logic is. He looks at Heidemann. And this is the Chafetz Chaim! The Chafetz Chaim looks back and says, Shumi. What? And there in front of your eyes, the guy shoots the Chafetz Chaim in the head. And Heidemann watches the Gadol Hador, the Chafetz Chaim, crumble to the floor, taking a bullet instead of letting him die. Won't you? You'd say, oh my God! Oh my God! I must be in this world for a reason. I must be here for some incredibly important reason. But the only reason that hasn't happened is because no one has put the gun to the Chafetz Chaim's head! Because if they would, I promise you, he would take the bullet for any single person in this room! We don't realize how precious everything we do is. The Bnei Yisachar brings down his piece on Chanukah from the Ari HaKadosh. He says, Ma'at Masim Tovim, the mitzos, just a little Masim Tovim mitzos. He's saying in his day and age, the Ari was saying. Because it's so difficult, it was so difficult in his time to focus and to learn. And this is in Tzfat. It is so difficult, right? Not much going on in Tzfat. That anything you do, he says, on the level of the Tanan and Amorayim. What would the Ari HaKadosh say today? In the world of smartphones, in the world that you can't even think for 2 seconds, in the world of constant stimulation and constant things, drawing us from a million different directions. It's mind-boggling. If we knew the extent of every word of Torah that we learned, of every time we overcame our anger, of every time instead of putting the person down, we picked him up, of every time we went ahead and we did Tikkun Avayim, the worlds, the Nefesh HaChaim writes, that we create with our masim, we'd be blown away by it. And by the way, that's the answer to the question that everyone always asks. People say, I don't understand, Rabbi. Rabbi Akiva couldn't go ahead and bring Mashiach. Moshe didn't bring Mashiach. Go through our history. Ravina, Ravashi, the Rosh, the Rif, the Rambam, the Ran. And you go down, you go through our history, all the greats. The Baal Shem Tov didn't bring Mashiach. We're going to bring Mashiach. How are we going to bring Mashiach? And the Chafetz Chaim gives an answer. And guys, we know when Mamash at the doorstep, we're there. He gives an answer he gives a mashal. He says there was a guy He was a farmer. And every year he would go ahead, he lived in like this middle of nowhere, and he would work the land, and every year he'd get like 20 bags of grain. And once a year, the grain buyer would come. Once a year this guy would come, and the grain buyer, he was like, he would go ahead, all the bags would be lined up. He would stick his meaty arms in deep into the bag, pick his hands up like this, looking at all the grain. If it's not ripe enough, too ripe, he wouldn't take it. I think the most he ever sold, the most sacks he ever sold, he sold 4 sacks of grain 1 year. It was like a battery year. What happens? Turns out a world war breaks out. Things are totally chaotic, hectic all over. This guy in his little farm in the middle of nowhere, he's like in his own little world. And he's getting ready for the grain buyer is coming. And he's all nervous, and his wife's there, and his kids, and they wear their best clothing. And there, he sees the big bag of the grain buyer coming up, and he's got his 20 bags of grain, and he's so nervous. How many will he sell this year? You know, because hopefully, what the money gets, he buys all the other things he needs, and he loses all the rest of it. You know, how much will he be able to sell? And he's waiting, and the guy comes up. The grain buyer gets off the wagon, looks at the farmer, looks at the 20 bags, big 20 bags of grain. And he says, "How much?" The farmer looks at his wife like, "Oh, he's playing." You know, sometimes the guy's a joker. He's playing. So he figures, he's playing with me. I'll go ahead, I'll play back. He goes, quadruples the price of the highest he ever got for a bag. You know, 100, you know, whatever it is, rubles, whatever per bag. The grain buyer hears me. Says, "Okay, I'll take them." "What? I'll take them. How many?" "All of them." Tells his foreman, his workers, start loading them on. Now this farmer, he's what? It's like two. At any second, he's like, "Ah, I got you." You know, one of those things. Can't be. So he's just standing there as these workers load all 20 sacks. The guy comes with a wad of cash. More money than this guy's ever seen his whole life. Gives it to him. And still the farmer wants to say something. He's too scared. Only once he has the money. It's actually in his pocket. He's got his hand on his pocket. And the grain buyer begins to drive off. He can't help himself. Wait a second! The guy stops the horses. He says, "Tell me something. Every year you come here, you stick your arms in, you look. No, this isn't good. That's not good. No. The most I ever sold you, my whole life. My father's whole life. My grandfather's whole life. The most we ever sold in 1 year was 4 bags of grain. Now you come in. You took everything. You didn't even check it. I don't understand." The grain buyer looks at the farmer and says, "Are you kidding?" He says, "No, I thought you were kidding." He says, "Do you have any idea what's going on in the world? Do you realize it's a world war out there? There's anarchy, there's chaos. Do you realize how valuable every little seed is? Doesn't matter, ripe, unripe. There's such a shortage out there. Such a food shortage! Every single piece of grain is priceless!" The Chafetz Chaim says the same thing is true today. Mr. Mesil Sharm says today it's the Milchama Gedola. Look at what's going on in the world today. Look what's going on. How many Jews are falling to the wayside, disappearing day after day. Intermarriage, disappear. We're on the endangered species list. It's frightening. Do you realize how few we are? How rare we are? We still remember. We still remember we're part of something. We're part of a chain that was formed in the crucible of Mitzrayim and stretches till this day. That chain is called the Mesorah. And every day that chain is being broken. The chain is slipping through our hands. Do you realize what's going on in the world today? Do you realize how valuable every word of learning and of davening and of chesed you do today is? You're doing this summer.
especially now. This is the time of the year all the great yeshivas in Israel, all over the world, they're all off. They're all on Beis Manim. After May of Esrim, you'll get there and you'll see how the learning you did now could be the world isn't existent because of what's going on here. Because of those words of learning that you're speaking. Happening that you're doing. And I'm not exaggerating.
Nebuch, Nebuch. Don't be that guy that gives the billions back. Keep the change. Don't be that guy. Meretz Hashem, we should all be zoche to open our eyes to the greatness, the bekoach, the potential that lies within us. And may we be able to go ahead and to actualize it, to bring it in bepoal, so that we'll be as great and as vast as our potential truly is. Have a good night, guys. Let's go.